Rand Howell, how are you? Good to have you again. How are things?
I am well. It's a beautiful day here in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it's going to start getting that southern hot and steamy here pretty soon, but that's what air conditioning is for.
Exactly. I'll never complain about warm weather myself, coming from Africa and living in the UK. Good. Great to have you back. We had a really strong first session, and we discussed in immense detail, and there's been good feedback on that one, about understanding the many, many different ways we sabotage ourselves. And while we were just chatting before this call, I was reminding about how one of the things that stood out for me that you said from the last session was that we're less rational as humans, but more rationalizing. And then you led into a very good paraphrase, which I'd love to hear you say state again about the alibi.
Yeah. What happens, and when you take a look at the emotional brain and the thinking brain, is understand information gets to the emotional brain long before, like nanoseconds before it gets to the thinking brain. So it's already a done deal by the time that information, decisions have already been made and gets to the thinking brain. That's a problem with rational thinking. And then what happens to thinking brain, what it's going to do, literally, it's going to produce an alibi that supports whatever the emotional brain has already decided. That's the whole key. The example is that, think about the last time you're trading, a mistake is made, because you just, you know, something happened and there was an emotional hijacking. In the moment of that, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. In the moment of the hijacking, but when you come back out of it, you recognize, what was I thinking? Okay, and that's the alibi business that goes on.
Absolutely. And it's a key point that it's designed to be faster, the emotional brain, because this is our fight and flight responses, which invariably save you and provide instinct, which is life preservational. And that yep. big concept that also came through in our understanding the problem. So just to re-summarize that before we go into step two, which is probably the most exciting and critical part where people start to get value about what to do with it, is that our brain doesn't differentiate between psychological discomfort on an adverse move on a P&L and a saber-toothed tiger threat at the mouth of our cave. They both promote these instantaneous emotional responses, which, as you say, hijack, or our first responders are always quicker out the blocks than the rationalizing conceptual part of the brain, which actually does deduction and assesses facts.
Yeah, there's actually, when information is coming in from the brainstem up into the emotional brain first, there is a part of the brain called the hippocampus that basically analyzes and decides that, does this information need to go into action right this second? And that's called the low road. And it literally moves from the feeling state to action. And it's never routed to the thinking brain. Okay?
No.
And then there comes a moment, if things are cool enough, you know, in terms of survival, the hippocampus allows the information to go to the thinking brain, and that's when you get the ability of logic and emotion working together, which is what we want in trading. We want logic and emotion working together as a team to produce what we call trader's state of mind.
And that amazing point you said, that if I can tag on this real value stem, which will just further make your point so critical that it is that trading by essence is the dealing with uncertainty with a probability-based mentality. Mm-hmm. Probability is a rationalizing function that requires the rational brain. And
yes,
anything that short circuits or bypasses that and is triggered straight away to the instant action, this is urgent, invariably goes, as you aptly phrased, the low road, which you want to be doing as little as possible, if at all, in terms of trading outcomes. And it's literally the low road decisions that have done all the worst damage to
traders.
And we can also branch that out and say that it's triggered by certain fears, which can be fear of loss or fear of missing out. So the both the greed and the fear reflexes within our emotional complex of potential reactions are facilitated in that low road eventuality.
And understand is that to the brain, fear of loss is not about capital. It's fear of loss of life, of the organism. So the moment that you may have a fear of loss on a psychological level, but that's only one level of this thing. It's also about fear of loss means fear of life. And you can see the urgency that the emotional brain is going to have in taking over response to environment. That's the way it works. And like fear of missing out, you know, the thing is, that's where, you know, I've already got it, but you know, what happens? What if it's taken from me? And all of a sudden you can see, pow, it's easy to take the low route and suddenly jump and take a small profit when there was a lot more money there on the table, but you just left it.
Correct. Correct. And those Pavlovian responses are kicking in instead of the rationalizing mentality, the probability-based assessment. It's interesting that both in our HVF trading, we actually talk about, and I've created a word for it, a jargon almost, for want of a better phrase, of a probability-based outcome. And we call every assessment must have a POUT score, the probability-based outcome. And try understand what is the likelihoods of this happening. And we do certain elements of analysis within a pattern, what are the momentum swings like, etc. And this takes time. When you're in a fear situation or you're in a response, you have that time, but you don't behave as if you do. That's fascinating. I think we've done a great recap of that awesome session. So let's move on to the new material, Rand, because this brings us to the point now. Okay, we understand this happens. We're starting to get the mechanics of how our body works. What do we do about it to stop these hairline emerge out of nowhere, instantly processed and zap? It's almost like it's so fast. It's kind of like fighting Sugar Ray Leonard. You may know it's fast and it's coming and it may happen, but how do you stop from getting hit?
Yeah. Well, it begins with this, again, the understanding of emotions, that emotions are biological, okay? They are not psychological. They take over psychology. That's the first hint. Then you say, well, if emotions are biological, there's obviously a signature for that emotion, okay? That signature is going to include particularly what we're interested in is the way you breathe, and the way you hold tension in your body. Also, your heart rate, and, you know, whether or not your skin conductance is triggering. But those things are beyond really what the typical trader is going to be able to deal with. However, they can observe their lungs, the way it's breathing, and they can observe tension in body. Why is this important? All emotions with this signature, emotions such as, well, the negative emotions like anger and fear and overconfidence, what you're going to see with them is the breath component of that emotion. You're going to stop breathing, or you're going to have rapid high breathing. What you're doing is you are literally throwing gasoline onto the embers of the emotion at that moment, because ultimately, the moment that you start breathing, not breathing, holding breath, or breathing high, what you're doing is you're stopping oxygen going to the brain, great, which is what logic needs, okay? And you're rerouting it to the big muscles. It wants to fight or flight at that particular time. And the same thing with tension is that in tension, when you see tension in your body, that's just not muscle tension, Francis. That's emotional arousal. The emotion is revving up, ready to gun. You have to be able to interrupt that. And we'll continue. And I know you had a comment.
Yes. It's absolutely fascinating, and I wanted to let you finish that flow and that encapsulating point before cutting in, because that was really just excellent synopsis right there. And the fascinating thing, and I'm going to take a slight sidebar here, but there's great parallels in it. One of the key reasons we trade breakouts is because we believe it's the most emotionally comfortable situation to be in. In other words, when the one side of the supply-demand curve is dominating the other, and it's taking your trade away from your stop. This is designed to de-emotionalize you and to introduce comfort into what is an uncertain, probability-based, no certainties, no guarantees game. And the fascinating thing in devising the HVF method, just as a small synopsis, which I think will tie very closely into this, is that I looked for what preceded all the most convincing breakout moves.
Absolutely.
And in essence, what you're doing emotionally and psychologically as a performance coach to traders who I hold in a very high esteem is you're saying, identify, we think that the rattlesnake just strikes out of nowhere. But before there, just like our trade setup where there is a coiling situation, you also are getting an emotional coiling and a recognition that is slowly dawning that there's a pressure situation emerging. It isn't just completely out the blue. It seems out of the blue because we fail to recognize the precursory warnings of the event. In the same way that people say, wow, that market just suddenly smashed up like that. I would never have seen it happening. And all the people in our HVF board said, we've been watching that and waiting for that for days, hours, weeks, etc. And we're in the trade and the market's taken us in. Because we have focused and preempt our entire trading strategy on the coiling that occurs before the event. And what you're actually saying is for us to become efficient traders and not to emotionally respond, we need to become experts at recognizing at that which precedes.
Oh, absolutely. You will see, Francis, you will see when you're – I used to videotape, or I still occasionally do videotape traders, because they would go, I don't know what's happening. I just suddenly find myself in this situation. We would often find the emotion actually had triggered 15, 20 minutes earlier. And if the trader had been able to see that and to know what to do with the emotion at that particular moment in time, he would have been able to regulate it so that it didn't hit a threshold that hijacking occurs. But the emotion, yeah, the markers of the emotion happen minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes ago, and he didn't see it. Meanwhile, anybody watching the observer dispassionately is going to see that, oh, he's holding his breath. Oh, he's fixated. Oh, he's got this tension. He's sitting like this. And those are all markers for emotions, and they're not the emotions that you want, creating the mind to manage probability.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. And it's kind of like we are actually inertia-based generally. It's quite hard to suddenly have this rattlesnake coiled strike emotional energy. In actually, it's like a turbocharger on a vehicle. It has to spool up and build this internal inertia. So we're actually creating an emotional. You get the first marker and you think, what does that mean? Oh, this isn't good. Hang on a minute. Oh, tense. And that's how, as you say, the restriction in the breathing is the petrol on the flame, and we create the sudden burst of flames, or the turbo suddenly spool up and there's that lag before you get the surge of power. And this is the key message for everybody that I want to get through, that people can both identify it, preempt it, and stop it in its tracks.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say stop it in tracks, but again, what you're doing is you're stopping it from reaching a particular threshold. Because emotions really work in thresholds. They build, they build, they build, they build. And all of a sudden, it's kind of like if you've ever watched a drag race, drag racer, is you see those lights and bang, bing, bing, and all of a sudden, that's what an emotion is like. It builds up, but it hits a particular threshold where, Francis, it's no longer building up. A switch has been turned, and literally the chemistry of that emotion is surging through the body.
At that point, it's too late, is it?
Healing.
Is that point it's too late and it has to be released?
Oh, boy. That's a terrible time to try to regulate an emotion. Because it's full. When that happens, is literally the best way a trader can do is just say, I'm out of here. I have to go burn this energy. I have to get on a treadmill. I have to get on an exercise trampoline. I have to do something that allows me to burn the cortisol or the testosterone that has built up in my system, the adrenaline in my system, so that I get back within this very narrow physiological range called trader state of mind. But yeah, the thing is you're looking at it, you have to catch it early. Because if you don't catch it early, your thinking's compromised anyway. The moment cortisol hits your bloodstream, you're thinking, oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? And the future's really bleak and stuff like that. That's cortisol in the system altering thought. So that's how it works.
And it's a high stress hormone, isn't it? Yes, that's fascinating. So in the dragster analogy, when the first and the second light of, they usually have three greens, three yellows, and then, three yellows, three reds, and then three greens for go. You need to catch it after the first set of lights before it gains so much kinetic energy, it has to erupt. You train yourself
to do that, yes.
Yeah. So when we recognize the following, and let's just go through that list again before we go into how we go about containing it or stop the bleeding, as you were, the triage situation. What are the signs? Breathing becomes shallow and fast,
or
and in the top third of the lungs, and like that. Tension, usually we carry tension, shoulder blades, traps, like that. Shrugged shoulders, high, locked in, because it's a lot of brown fat and muscular there, and we create coiled tension that can release limbs suddenly. Where else should folk be looking at it? They become asphyxiated with the screen, maybe, sort of like all encompassed, no sense of peripheral vision, no sense of what's going on around them, tunnel vision, hyper state, wide-eyed, maybe.
Fixation in psychology. Tunnel vision is a really good way of describing it, but we call it fixation.
Fixation.
And that's actually something where, you know, it's common for a trader who works with me to have a video feed of themselves or have a mirror so that they're watching themselves and can actually see the emotions as they emerge on face.
Wow, what a great idea. I used to laugh. They were almost like rear mirrors for watching if your manager came along. Every trader should have one of those bubbles to actually see themselves, not other people coming up behind them, but to see themselves and actually recognize that they appear as highly fixated, tense, a bit monodirectional and mindset orientated. Are there any other signals?
Well, those are the main ones. The main thing that you're looking for, Francis, is you're looking for the tendency. Okay? And you're looking to catch the anticipation of that tendency instead of pretending it's not going to happen again. You know that, like, for instance, a person who has problems with setups, you know, whether or not they're freezing or whether or not they're jumping into things, if you know that, if you know you have a tendency to have a problem, is you prepare for it so that as you move into that moment, as you move into that arena of action, what you're doing is you're saying, I know now that I have a tendency for my breath to start really going off, my tension to start really jacking up. And I know the emotions there. And by the way, I actually also with my students, I use heart rate monitors with the strap, where what we're looking for is that you will see the spike of where the emotion actually begins. And out of that, and that, by the way, that's far better than a video feed. And what happens when you see that spike, what you're doing is you're saying, I have a moment here that I can go back and I can voluntarily alter the way I'm breathing, and that will cool the emotion down. Because what's interesting about each emotion, yeah, they have a signature. And if you alter that signature, what you do is you interrupt that emotion from growing and taking over. Like, for instance, it's called the relaxation response by Herbert. He was a physiologist who studied yogas. And yogas were saying that, you know, we can control blood pressure, we can control a lot of stuff. And Western science says, no, you can't. And so he got a bunch of yogas in there. And what they discovered is, yes, they can. And what he did is what Herbert Benson did is he stripped out the spirituality and noticed that it was really breathing and tension reduction that allowed them to be able to manage the emotion, to manage the tension and the blood pressure in the body. So what he did is he created something called the relaxation response, where literally he started training. And again, I do this in my training too, is that as you approach a situation that you know has a tendency to generate an emotional hijacking, you prepare for it. And what you do is you train your body and your brain to have a relaxation response to the same stimuli, to the same stressors that had been triggering all the anxiety or all the anger. So you train yourself going in. And in my work, it's called stress inoculation, where we're inoculating you to the stress. We're preparing you to manage the stress before it happens. You know it's going to happen. The moment that you hit uncertainty, there's going to be stress. That's it. But you can train yourself before you get there.
Fabulous. Love that. I love the idea of the heart rate monitor. How else, apart from seeing heart rate monitor spikes and maybe a self-awareness mirror that makes people more self-aware, because a large amount of this is just medical tools and equipment to help create self-awareness. And what tends to happen is the more you get fixated, the less you become self-aware, because all your concentration is being so monopolized and directed. So it becomes harder to become more self-aware at points where you're becoming very fixated. And then you also have the biological reasons that you mentioned, such as the oxygen draining from the brain, going to the fight-flight response to highly oxygenate your muscles and the blood in your muscles, the blood draining from your brain to highly prepare your muscles for instant glycogen depletion for an explosive move of some variety. Are there any, how could a trader, apart from those tools such as the heart rate monitor and the mirror or the video feed of self, how could they note at what part of the trading process they have the greatest sticking point? Is there any other mechanisms that we can see?
Well, first of all, I divide trading into 9 phases, okay? And what you're doing is you're saying, okay, within these 9 phases, I need to start watching what my tendencies are. A lot of this is self-mastery and self-observation. You know, you're not going to find some magic bullet that if you know this one piece of knowledge, it changes everything. This is about self-mastery. But what you're doing is you're breaking down the trade and you're going, okay, it is these particular moments, these particular movements within the trade that I need to become an observer to. I need to watch my body, and maybe actually what you're asking, you're loading it saying we really need to get to mindfulness here pretty soon, because ultimately what you're doing is you have to start noticing what in the world's going on with you. Is that most people, when they first start this, they realize that they've been living blindly, and they get into trading and they just, any old mind that they happen to bring along that morning, that's what they bring to the game. And when you look at really top athletes, they're very intentional about the mind that they bring into the performance. They just don't wake up and say, well, okay, here we are. No, they take great care to build the mind for that moment. And you'll see, like golfers, they have their sports psychologists with them, the top players. And what they do is they're practicing with the sports psychologist during the tournament to make sure that they're staying in the now, staying in the moment, and they're watching themselves. They have an extra set of eyes watching them to see where there's fissures in their performance mind. You know, in trading, you're going to have to do it yourself. Okay, but there's plenty of things that you can do as you develop the mindfulness. And the first thing is you have to become an observer of your body. And I promise you, if you can observe tension in your body, if you can observe breath and body, heart rate and body, you have an enormous step in terms of learning how to produce self-control in the face of uncertainty. You can go, I know that I can apply, when I start seeing those, I can start this process of relaxation response. I also know that I can anticipate the moment so that I go in to an area where I have a tendency to trip up. I'm going to anticipate that moment and be prepared for it this time rather than get ambushed by it.
That's
Big deal.
totally the preparedness mindset. Yes, being forewarned is to be prepared. And that's just the journey of learning. I mean, all of this just highlights what an absolutely magnificent personal development program in all fields trading is. Because how
Absolutely.
is any of this not useful for peak performance or in high-pressure situations, in a top level? And
That's actually what I find. People who take my work, what they do is some of them up front saying, "You know something, Randy? This applies to more than trading, doesn't it?" And I said, "Oh yeah, it definitely does." And in trading, the difference between trading and the rest of life is that trading between act and result, there is an enormous, it's very fast. It's like instant karma, okay? Whereas in life, you can deceive yourself for a long time, and you never have to buy into it saying, "You know something, what I'm doing is really blowing myself up." I mean, my father, bless his soul, he smoked Camel unfiltered cigarettes for 52 years. There were constantly people coming to him saying, "Howard, this is really, this is not good for you." And my dad would look and go, "Well, it's not killing me." And he would just push it aside. In trading, you don't have that luxury. You whatever belief system, however you prepare the mind, is constantly being tested by the markets, and you're getting an assessment in your trading
Feedback
account.
assessment, and it is brutal, and it is an accelerated, accentuated, leveraged, hyper turbocharged version that will find the weakness and break the smallest link in that chain.
It
Until you go
will.
back and fix that chain, that particular link, you are not getting to carry more tension and greater gains and greater development. And as you say, it's just it's an accelerated of those 5% at the extremes of life version where you get truly tested. And most of us are in a generalist comfort zone most of the time, in our
Absolutely.
normal life zone, and can trundle on smoking Camel for 52 years because it hasn't yet killed you. Exactly. And it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Let's go into greater depth, on process now. So here I am. Now, just before I do that, actually, just quick sidebar. I want to make a small comment because there is something that's a little bit unique about us, and I'd like to hear your take on this. Something a little bit unique about HVF traders that you may or may not know. What we try do is we avoid all market-based responses. In other words, reacting. We think reacting as a whole is generally not a very good place to be. So we predetermine on a setup the probability-based account outcome. We accept that the probability we don't want to have happen has a likelihood of occurring on occasion and is always potentially possible. We size for that event. So all while assuming success through the basis of the probability-based assessment, we size for failure. And the entire trade is actually put on. So I've actually played a game, and HVF's theory traders have played the game in that we take ourselves away from ever emotionally responding. In other words, we're often not there, which I call the best position to be in, because
Right.
it cauterizes the need for the emotional response. You are stopped out. I wasn't there. I wasn't watching it. You make profit. I was asleep. It was in the morning, and I was up until 3 last night working on other setups. You were taken in. It happened over lunchtime on thin trade. You weren't watching. All of these events. So, in actual fact, a lot of the key critical events are executed on the basis of predetermined if this, then that statements that have been designed, and the entire order structure has been placed with the broker, meaning that it is just a matter of the relevant outcomes, in other words, the conditional events occurring for the trade to reach closure.